Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Paul. It's Jordana and Paul Douglas out in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Welcome.
Hello. I'm just far enough away from Philly. Yeah. I'm 75 miles west of Philly, which is just the right distance.
Because they're going to get some of this. Florence, right?
No.
Oh, they're not going to. Oh, then why are you?
Because I'm scared of Philadelphia. Oh. No, I shouldn't say that. Philly's a great city.
Yeah, they're pretty scary.
But not like Minneapolis, St. Paul. It's always good coming back. I was born here. My first 18 years of life were here. So Minnesota's home. But it's nice coming back and seeing my dad and my sister.
And please thank him for us. Say goodbye and thank him for us because it was just so great to have him on the air.
Yeah, he wants to say goodbye. He goes, I want to tell goodbye to Jordana. I think he's got a little crush on you.
I love him.
So yeah. Do I.
All right, is he going to get back on the air or no?
No, he's not here.
He's not.
I think he's at.
I thought he was going to say goodbye.
I think he's in the bathroom. Mm. Although my sister is here.
Say hi to Joan.
Joan, say hi to Jordana.
Hi, Jordana. How
hi,
are you?
Hi, Joan. Oh, it's like a whole family reunion, Joan.
All,
great to see you, love.
Okay, here's what you say. How's my brother doing?
Is Doug doing a good job? Is he pulling his weight?
It could be better. I got to be honest, it could be better.
Okay, and we're done.
Love that. Look, she's your sister. She has to needle you a little bit.
She has listen, to stick up for me. Thanks.
Yes, we're talking about Florence. Obviously, we're covering that. But really, another big story today was President Trump's tweet this morning. We delved into this briefly at the top of the show. He tweeted out this morning, 3,000 people did not die in the two hurricanes that hit Puerto Rico. When I left the island after the storm hit, they had anywhere from 6 to 18 deaths. As time went by, it did not go up by much. Then a long time later, they started to report really large numbers like 3,000. This was done by the Democrats in order to make me look as bad as possible when I was successfully raising billions of dollars to help rebuild Puerto Rico. If a person died for any reason, like old age, just add them onto the list. Bad politics. I love Puerto Rico. So this tweet has been obviously sending shockwaves through both the Democratic and Republican communities, and people have responded. We said at the top of the show, Paul Ryan says, quote, casualties don't make a person look bad, so I have no reason to dispute these numbers. The governor of Puerto Rico says victims of Puerto Rico and the people of Puerto Rico in general do not deserve to be questioned about their pain. And I know you had some other an Illinois Democrat. I mean, you can imagine the Democratic response that Trump is delusional and incapable of empathy or basic human decency.
Hey, Jor.
Yeah.
You know, everything is being weaponized right now. And I don't dispute this independent study done by the Institute School of Public Health at George Washington University. Came up with 2,975 deaths, not the initial 64 that died from the storm itself, but weeks, you know, in some cases months after the fact, directly attributable to lack of water, lack of hygiene, lack of medicine, mm-hmm. Infant formula, et cetera, et cetera. And that was the lesson of Katrina. And George Bush, President Bush, got a lot of flack for the reaction to Katrina. 1,800 Americans lost their lives, the vast majority days, weeks after the storm flooded New Orleans. It wasn't right away. And that's what we're learning about hurricanes. It's not the storm, it's the aftermath that kills people. And it, you know, but again, it was a big political flap with President Bush and Katrina.
It seems like we haven't learned anything, though. You know, we should have learned the lessons from Katrina. We should have learned the lessons from Puerto Rico. And just yesterday, we're learning that documents from the Department of Homeland Security have diverted nearly $10 million from FEMA, into ICE. FEMA is Federal Emergency Management Administration, which handles national natural disaster relief like Florence. And Immigration and Customs Enforcement is ICE, responsible for detaining and deporting immigrants. Just this week, $10 million got moved from FEMA to ICE. And I'm not saying ICE maybe doesn't need those funds, but the optics of this are brutal. It feels like we have learned nothing. That's the question we have for you, which we can open the phones about. Was this a good move? What do you think that this is a good move? Should we be moving $10 million, and we're going to need a whole lot more probably to rebuild North Carolina after this, but should we be moving that $10 million this week from FEMA to ICE? 651-989-9226 is our number. 81807 is our text line. Chef Jose Andres was on the CBS This Morning show this morning. He has written a book called We Fed an Island. He's a celebrity chef. He has multiple restaurants all across the country. He talked about the relief efforts because he was there. He was boots on the ground after Maria in Puerto Rico to help feed people, to get them food, to get them meals. Here's how he describes what it was like on the ground and President Trump's response.
My role was to feed people. But the first places we went were hospitals. Mm-hmm. We knew what was happening. People knew that maybe a lot of people didn't die right during the hurricane, but the number began increasing very quickly. We need to understand we had a lot of old people that because they ran out of electricity, people that had breathing machines, they were dying because they didn't have the small generators to be able to breathe. But many months later, we had generators. I know the federal government had them, and they were not distributing them. Water, all people falling in front of me because they didn't drink for 3 days. People that didn't have food. Those things were real, were happening. I think a president, any leader, President Trump, a leader is here to praise their people and to take responsibility to the shortfalls. That's what any leader should be doing. And I don't think President Trump is helping, for example, this next hurricane, but almost praising himself for all the great things he did. I think a president should be leading their people, telling them, we need to be ready, we need to learn from past shortfalls, from past mistakes, so we make sure that this will never happen again. More than 3,000 people died in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. And actually, President Trump, as the leader of America, has, let's say, a lot of blame to take.
Harsh words from Chef Jose Andres, who was there on the ground feeding the people of Puerto Rico. Let's see. We have Skip in Golden Valley on the line. Hi, Skip.
Hi, Jordana.
What's up?
My question is, do they actually have a coroner's report on this so-called amount of casualties in Puerto Rico? And the press fails to remind the listeners that the power company was only two guys out of Montana that had the whole island of Puerto Rico.
And that's because our government only sent two guys from Montana. We failed.
Right, but the contract was also issued way before the Trump administration. It was go back to President Obama.
I don't believe it was. I believe that was changed. It was called that Whitefish,
well,
and it was,
I think
it was directly related to President Trump, who assigned him.
I think you'll find it, but...
And just to be clear,
we know what party you're voting for. Have a great day.
And Skip, just to be clear, I want to get the facts straight. The estimate of the nearly 3,000 dead in the 6 months after Maria was made by researchers with the Milken Institute of Public Health at George Washington University. The study said the original estimates were low because the doctors on the island had not been trained properly. So this is an independent study of the deaths that were attributed to Hurricane Maria. Oh,
yeah, I don't think there's anything partisan about this.
Skip hung up, unfortunately. That's too bad.
Yeah. Well, we know what party you're voting for.
Yeah, I mean, again, this shouldn't be partisan. It should be
Wait,
we failed
did I hear
miserably
party? Where's the party?
We failed miserably, and we're terrible at this. And now that Florence is bearing down, we need to do better. What's the plan? Where are the folks? Why are we moving millions of dollars from one agency to another? We need to do better.
Well, we have FEMA. I mean, the Federal Emergency Management Agency does do a good job, and there is money allocated, and they have moved resources in the path. So we are as ready as we can be. But these things are unpredictable. We don't know who's going to get 20, 30 inches of rain. We don't know yet where the worst of the storm surge will be. We have a fairly good idea. But if this thing does what the European model is suggesting, Jor, and tracks towards Charleston or Myrtle Beach, if it just keeps thrashing right along the coast for the better part of 36, 48 hours, all bets are off. So, you know, the science has progressed. It's not perfect. It's never going to be perfect. We do a slightly better job tracking the actual track of a hurricane than we do the intensity. Will it be a Cat 1, Cat 2, Cat 3? But there's still a lot of unknowns with this. So, yeah, I mean, all the preparation in the world is great, and we have to do that. We have to learn the lesson of history. I don't dispute that. But some of this is unknowable. We don't know what we don't know with this storm, and there's a certain amount of we just have to sit back and kind of see what happens and then throw every resource we can find at the survivors and help as quickly as we can, because we know days and weeks, the first few days and weeks after the storm are time critical. If we don't reach, especially infants, newborns, people with disabilities, people on respirators, older people who need resources just to live, to breathe, those people are going to die. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful. I can't say I'm optimistic, but I'm hopeful that we do the right thing with Florence.
I'm with you. I hope, and we can only hope, right? You and I are not in charge of FEMA. We can only hope. It's also 422.
And when we come back, Jor, we have somebody at Ground Zero, an old friend of mine, a fellow Penn State graduate, Mike Seidel from the Weather Channel. He is at Ground Zero, Wilmington, North Carolina. A chat with Mike when we come back on CCO. Paul and Jordana back with you, tracking Florence, and I can spout statistics and talk about weather models, but we have Mike, right?
You know what? We're efforting Mike. We're getting him on, but it's amazing to me that these meteorologists are so brave that they go down and they stand there on the beach, and the cameramen, I find it frightening. And do you know, Paul, we can ask Mike, does he have like a backup plan? Does he have an armored vehicle that he can escape to that's waterproof if he needs it? Or, you know.
Yeah, they always have, to the best of my knowledge, they have an escape route.
Okay.
They are taking some risk being out there in the wind. I worry about flying debris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
And we can ask Mike that question. Mike Seidel, my old buddy from Penn State, a fellow meteorologist and a star at the Weather Channel. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Good afternoon, Paul. And without a doubt, I have to tell you this, it doesn't matter what the weather's like, but the Waffle House here in Wilmington, North Carolina is open.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And it will be waffles.
Mike, tell us about the Waffle House Index.
I don't know what it is, but, you know, there is nothing open. The town is deserted. We're in Wilmington, just inland from the beach, and we're here. We just pulled up, and do I sound happy? I mean, I've got granola bars. I've got tuna fish in a can, but you know, there's nothing like a hot meal. The power is still on across this area. We're just getting into the first rain bands. We've gusted at the airport about 45 miles an hour. But other than that, we're just getting into the initial stages of this. Everybody very thankful, Paul. The winds have been going down from 140 to 100. So that's good. But as you well know, this thing is just going to slow down. And that's the issue. If we just come in and leave, come in and go
right
through the area, we'd be in much better shape. But surge, a big issue, and, you know, lots and lots of rainfall, Paul.
Hey, Mike, are people heeding the evacuations? I mean, can you get a sense? Are people staying behind saying, oh, it's only a Category 2, we can ride this out, we've seen worse? Are you getting a lot of that or not?
Well, you know, on the barrier island, like Wrightsville Beach, they put a mandatory in yesterday morning, and that island is basically empty. There's some media, and I talked to the mayor earlier on the Weather Channel, and he says there may be residents out of 2,500. So they're heeding the warnings. Even folks near the intercoastal, they're high enough, they're not going to get the surge, but they didn't want to have to deal with power being out for a week or 2 weeks, so they went inland. But by and large, if there are people in town, they're staying put because the highways are pretty empty right now here in Wilmington. But as you know, they've evacuated coastal South Carolina, and we're still waiting to see where it ends up after it supposedly makes landfall here tomorrow afternoon. Does it go down the coast and really impact Myrtle Beach more severely, or is it just drift
right
southwest inland and stay north of Myrtle Beach? But this is one for the ages. The fact that, as you know, and you talked about and you've written about in the paper, where it was about a week or so ago, climatologically, a hurricane had never made landfall from that position in the Atlantic.
We had that big blocking ridge to the north. But you've seen the latest Euro, and are you buying it? Is the Weather Channel buying the possibility that it's going to stall and drift southwest closer to Charleston and Myrtle Beach? Are you going with that, or do you think it's just going to head right inland?
Well,
putting it on the spot.
You're really putting me on the spot, Mr. Douglas.
Come on, give me your best guess.
I mean, you know, the GFS is being pretty strong at not taking it inland and keeping it north of Myrtle Beach and taking it over towards Lake Columbia. But, you know, the European is the bellwether of the models, and we'll just see who gets the W here.
Right.
It certainly puts suspense in the forecast. And, you know, you watch the models come in like back in the days of Penn State when you'd watch the model come in on the fax paper for the next snowstorm, you know, inch by inch on that fax paper.
Hey, Mike, it's Jordana. Yeah. I'm Paul's partner. Models, schmodels, how do you stay alive when you are, like, they put you out there on, the shore and the waves are crashing and the winds are 50 million miles an hour? How are you alive? do you have, lead boots? And do you have an armored vehicle that turns into a submarine that the CIA made for you?
Well, no, I don't put myself in that kind of danger. Now, last week I was covering Gordon down on the coast of Alabama in Dolphin Island, and we got hit battered pretty hard for about 4 hours, and our gust was 74 miles an hour. And that's about as extreme as you want to take. And we didn't have to worry about surge, a little bit of surge. Mm-hmm. This is a whole different animal because that whole island, Wrightsville Beach, the barrier, will probably go underwater. And you know, yesterday we were talking winds 120, 125 miles an hour. Now they're done, thankfully, down to 100. So we're not out there. We're inland. We're away from the surge zone. We're staying safe. Okay, and that's how I stay safe. You know, people ask me what's the most dangerous thing you've ever been in. And the real thing that makes me nervous when I'm doing a live shot is lightning. Really, when it comes to snowstorms,
right.
you know, not a problem. When it comes to hurricanes, something like this, you just pull yourself away from the danger zone and then ride it out. But that's how I survive.
Hey, Mike, real quick.
Go ahead. Yeah, sure.
Real quick, how many live shots have you done for the Weather Channel in your career?
I'm up to about 20,000. I should be around 20,700 right about now. I did 20,000
in Moses.
In Rochester last February. That's quite a lot of live shots. And I never thought I'd be there at the Weather Channel. I've been there, 20, going on 27 years.
Well, congratulations on that long tenure. You do an amazing job. You always keep your cool. And by the way, the Waffle House Index, something that FEMA refers to, if it's full menu and the Waffle House is open, the lights are on, that's good. If there's limited menu, that means limited power. If the restaurant is closed, that's not good.
Scientific.
It seems like
exactly.
The Waffle House knows something the rest of us don't. But you be careful down there, my friend, okay?
Yeah, and it won't be long before I'm joining you folks up there at Nicollet Mall in sub-zero cold and snow.
Yeah.
You'll come in studio with us, my friend.
Thanks for the reminder.
Yeah. Okay, Paul.
Thanks, Mike. Stay safe.
Thanks, Mike. Well
thanks,
done.
Guys. Have a good day. Take care.
All right.
My girlfriend said to me today, we took a walk around the lake. She goes, I have a headache. That means it's going to rain tonight. I said, I'll tell Paul. And everybody's got their shtick. Everybody's got their...
Whatever works.
My joints hurt, my this, my that. You know, it happens. All right, we got to take a break. We're going to go way beyond the headlines and find out about the Minneapolis company who has created bulletproof dividers for classrooms here on CCO.
Paul and Jordana. Dad, you want to say goodbye to Jordana and our listeners?
Yes, I would like to thank all the listeners who said who wrote in and said very kind words to me about me. And I would like to mention, in a way, I'm sort of half of a Midwesterner. I had the good fortune that right out of high school, I received a scholarship to go to college in Indiana. So, yes, part of my heart is in the Midwest. And I've been here ever since. I did pretty well. One wife, three children, Paul is the oldest, two grandchildren, so no complaints. Yes, we are a great country, and we always were a great country. Again, thank you for your kind words.
Thank you, Dad.
He's a great guy.
And Dad's an immigrant, okay? He's a legal immigrant. He, you know, was able to find a job here from Germany and able to stay. So, you know, we can have the debate about legal versus illegal, and I get that. But
I bet he never thought he'd see the day when we needed bulletproof dividers in classrooms. As somebody who, Dad is a hunter, who respected guns, who used them responsibly, I'm sure he never thought the use of guns would be aborted and abused the way they are today. And that actually brings me to my first story, Paul. Northeast Minneapolis company is producing what it says is the first bullet-resistance portable room divider for rapid deployment in schools. Versair Solutions showed its portable shield partition yesterday. They say it's a first-of-its-kind product. It looks exactly like other room dividers. Like, think when you're in a ballroom and you see them partitioned off, or like a gym, you know, they set up a partition in the gym. That's what these look like. And they say the bulletproof ones, the bullet-resistant ones, look exactly like this because they didn't want them to freak the kids out or look any different. And they said they can be set up in about 8 to 10 seconds. They can reach up to 20 feet wide, but they can also, they can withstand multiple impacts from a .44 Magnum and a 9mm ammunition. Right here in Minneapolis, they're making solutions. I love that.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I had no idea.
Hey, Susan, swoosh me. Can you put up my whoosh? I'm trying to play it. On. We're working out the whoosh, Paul.
I need the swoosh.
Come on, Susan. We're working on it.
Do we have a committee?
All right, so whoosh, you go first, and then we'll do the work on that. Mm-hmm.
All right. Dad was a legal immigrant. He emigrated from Germany back in the early 50s. But I found this interesting. The U.S. foreign-born population hits its highest share since 1910. The foreign-born population of the USA, highest level since 1910. Most people arriving from Asia, not Latin America. According to the Census Bureau for 2017, a major change in who is coming to America. 41% of the people who said they arrived since 2010 came from Asia. 39% were from Central and South America. The quote from the gentleman at the Brookings Institution, William Fry, who conducted the analysis, he said, "We think of immigrants as being low-skilled workers from Latin America, but for recent arrivals, that's much less the case. People from Asia have overtaken people from Latin America." Found that kind of interesting.
Hmm. A novelist who wrote about how to murder your husband is now charged with murdering her husband. Nancy Crampton Brophy, yes, she wrote about murdering a spouse. She's a Portland-based romance novelist, authored books about relationships that were wrong but never felt so right. Oh, you can almost see the sex scene right there. You know, bare-chested men on the cover, the wrong cop was one of the titles, the whole deal. You know, and then she wrote about a woman who spent every day of her marriage fantasizing about killing her husband. The book was called The Wrong Husband. A woman tried to flee an abusive husband and faked her own death. Well, she wrote about, she posted an essay about it. And then at some point in real life, she appeared to follow her own advice. And that's according to the police report. Rather than hire a hitman, as maybe in her book, she pulled the trigger herself. She was arrested last Wednesday on charges of murdering her husband with a gun, unlawful use of a weapon in the death of her husband. By the way, the alleged motive has not been revealed in the police report. Maybe we will have to listen or read her next book for that. Terrible story, but maybe not so smart to write about how to do it in the first place.
Oh, boy. Are you buying more Nike products? Are you buying fewer Nike products in light of Nike highlighting, among others, Colin Kaepernick? The mayor of Kenner, Louisiana, that's a suburb of New Orleans, banned the recreation department from buying Nike products after the company ran the advertisement featuring the knee-taking NFL star Colin Kaepernick. But then apparently Ben Zahn, who's the mayor, had to do a U-turn. He rescinded the order on the advice of the city attorney. Zahn said, the mayor of Kenner, "My patriotism will not waver, but my focus needs to be on the city of Kenner and the many great projects we have in store for our city." Not clear why he rescinded the just undo it order. Found that a little bit interesting. Hmm. Paul and Jordana. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Anybody home?
I'm sorry. I was just, Mike Max is in studio, but I was just so taken. And he
I'm
was
glad Paul's not eating a cupcake.
He was eating a bar mitzvah cupcake.
Oh, I missed cupcake day?
Oh, boy, did you.
Leftovers from the bar mitzvah.
Hey, Maxie,
yeah.
Can I ask a real quick question and trample poor Jordana?
Sure, you bet.
Yep,
yep.
Trying to tell a story here, but okay, you guys just go.
I saw her reaching for a story. Mm-hmm. Smart money is that Aaron Rodgers will be playing on Sunday. Do you concur?
I do because I don't know enough, to be honest with you, but listening to him talk, he said it's no different than playing with something late in the year. You just play through it. So my thought is, and I could be wrong in my hypothesis, is that because he's coming off an injury he wants so bad, to play this year. He's just signed a big contract and prove it that if he can play, he will play. It's not one of those where if he can play, you say, well, I don't want to take any risks. That's what I think, but I don't know Aaron personally, but that's my guess.
In a story near and dear to Paul's heart, the weather is affecting some
events. Yeah, yeah. This is interesting, Paul. The MIAC has come up with a new heat index that says...
What's the MIAC?
The Minnesota Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, which I'm a proud alumni.
Great.
So this Saturday, they're changing games. Augsburg's going to play Concordia at 10 a.m. Here on CCO, they've already moved the game to Buzz, and it'll be on at 6 o'clock, St. Thomas playing instead of 1 o'clock. And I wish I had the numbers for you, Paul, because they would resonate more with you, but it was high 80s. They've got a new index that they use that you can't play or you have to stop play. High 80s in temperature, and I think it was 80-something in dew point. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. The heat index is going to be about 95 here on Saturday and Sunday. So I think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and this is the first time that they've really implemented it because obviously it doesn't affect Minnesota very often because they play during the school year, which is September through to May. So you're not going to have this happen very often. But it's a new thing. So everybody's changing their game time so that they can be assured they get them in. Obviously, this affects the game won't be here on CCO. It'll be on Buzzin. But it affects all games now if they're in play during that time
period. Wow.
So we'll keep
very
you posted.
Interesting.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Maxie.
I'm going to have another cupcake.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.